On this episode, we have a delightfully informative and entertaining talk with theme park journalist Carly Wiesel. Today is March 5th, 2021, and this is episode 336 of the Main Street Magic Podcast.
Most everyone's mad here.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Main Street Magic. I'm your host, Jeremy Stein, and I'm joined by my lovely wife, Rhonda.
Hey, guys.
Make sure you check us out on the web at mainstmagic.com, as well as follow on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at mainstmagic. If you've not done so already, why don't you head out to Facebook and search for the Main Street Magic community and ask to join. And we are now bringing you brand new episodes every Tuesday and Friday, so make sure you subscribe. If you want even more content, including in-park, resort, and at-home live streams, 15% off of our all-new Main Street Magic merchandise, which can be found at mainstreetshirts.com, and we're going to give you a whole lot more. We would love if you will check out our brand new Patreon group, which is available at wonderlandcrew.com. And finally, if you are looking for the absolute best in theme park-inspired coffees, teas, and merchandise, head on over to expeditionroasters.com and use code MSM15 at checkout to save 15% off your entire order. But you want to act fast, as that code will expire on March 31st. So today we are so excited to have Carly Wiesel on the show. If for some reason you're unfamiliar with who Carly is, Carly Wiesel is a writer and host who visited Walt Disney World on a whim and basically never left. Now a theme park journalist and travel expert, she specializes in translating interesting and unexpected Disney stories to super fans and stunned bystanders alike. As a go-to magazine reporter for all things Disney, Carly is a contributor at Travel and Leisure, has reported for Eater, GQ, Bloomberg, Glamour, Time, Popular Science, National Geographic, Domino, AFAR, Racked and Men's Journal, among many others. Carly's podcast, Very Amusing, became a smash hit in its first season for effortlessly fusing reporting and theme park humor. Named one of Blue Loop's 50 theme park industry insiders, Carly also co-authored the DK Eyewitness Florida 2020 guidebook and writes a weekly fan favorite column for Sci-Fi. Carly, thank you so much for joining us today on the show. We truly appreciate it. It's kind of like we're sitting here with Disney royalty. So welcome to the program.
Oh my, that is much too kind. Only if I was like 110th in line for the throne.
Yes. Well, we're gonna dive right into it because we're really excited to talk to you and learn, you know, and share more about you. So from my understanding, you did dabble in the past a bit in stand-up comedy. And I was wondering if that was kind of your introduction into the entertainment and media industry, or was there something that kind of fueled you and interested you long before that time?
I feel like you found the skeleton in my closet.
I did.
So I've been a professional writer since college. I basically spent senior year of college not doing a lot of work and just freelance writing, which to me, I was like, this feels like the right trade-off.
Yeah.
So I've been doing it since then, but about, gosh, it must be 6 or 7 years ago at this point, I was working an editorial job at a fashion company called ASOS. And after that, I was like, I think I want to go into TV writing. I think I want to do kind of like comedy writing, maybe not sketch, but something along those lines. And so I started to transition into that. And during that process was when I ended up going to Disney World as an adult for the first time. So I really hit this crossroads between, do I want to kind of focus on this theme park stuff, or do I want to go headfirst into sitcom writing, things like that? And I chose the Disney path, and I'm thrilled I did, because this is way more fun than sitting in a room playing make-believe.
I bet. No, that's so interesting.
Awesome.
So you were a lifestyle journalist in a sense, and working for this fashion, you know, magazine and company. So literally, I mean, you went to Disney and just thought, hey, this is so much more interesting, or what was that kind of made that switch? I mean, obviously we all love Disney. I totally could see why you would want to make that choice, but and what made you decide that, hey, you're going to focus straight on Disney and theme parks and kind of just go, this is the lane I'm choosing and this is the lane I want to move forward in?
So I do, it will sound fancier if I say that, you know, part of reporting is just just showing up in a new scenario and trying to get all the facts. But the truth is, I couldn't stay put. I would change my beat every year. One year I'd write about food. One year I'd write about exercise. I just couldn't stop changing what I did because I would get bored of it. And once I went to Disney World, I was like, I need to know everything that's happening here, which is essentially like a news-based approach. So I spent the first year or two just diving in and learning what I could, because as you know, everyone who is in this industry, who is involved in speaking on a theme park, knows their stuff. Yeah. Everyone knows their stuff. And usually a lot of it has to do with how long they've been a fan of the parks. So me coming in somewhat new from this editorial perspective of reporting on it, I was like, I gotta learn some stuff before I say a single word. And it took a few years to get there, but I just knew once I was there with a group of friends, I don't know what it was about there, but I was like, I need to do this. Like, I need to write about this place and learn every single thing I can. And the reason I still do it is because I haven't been bored yet, because there's so much to learn.
That is true.
So Walt Disney World was your first love. I know you're out in California now. Where were you at the time that you kind of fell in love with Walt Disney World, that's where you were traveling to?
I was still living in New York at the time. So okay. I grew up going to Disney World. I maybe went 2 or 3 times, but it was when I was really young. So yeah. I don't have those, you know, seminal Epcot memories. I have a few photos that I've like built a story around in my head, but it still, just going back made me feel nostalgic. You know, I remember the Grand Floridian very clearly, and being there extremely hungover on my bachelorette party, I was like, whoa, I stepped into a time machine.
Well, that's awesome. Carly, what challenges do you face as a female theme park journalist?
Oh, gosh. Well, thankfully, there's been more of us lately. Okay. When I showed up a couple years ago, you know, I went to my first media events knowing no one, like truly showing up, not knowing a single person. And I'm very, very thankful for the wonderful friends and colleagues I've been able to make along the way, because now I have a whole group of women who do this just like I do. And it's really awesome. Nice to have them there. And it doesn't feel as different, but I do notice that because I am very online, I guess you could say, the way that if I were to say something online and unfortunately, a man were to say something online, it is often taken differently. I find that more often people question my sources and where I got information, which they don't do to other people.
Right.
I mean, that's just like the society we live in. But thankfully, because I am very, very based in fact, I don't really comment on rumors. I try my best not to unless it's absolutely necessary. Because of that, I kind of can skate on by, because I know that I'm reporting only on truthful stuff. So that's the main thing that I've noticed, but it is interesting because I remember it must have been like a recent anniversary at Hollywood Studios. I was looking at a photo of, it was either like the grand opening of the park or the grand opening of Epcot, something like that. And it was a photo of reporters and they were 100% men.
Yeah.
100%. Wow. And so it was just weird to be standing there with my female colleagues and be like, years ago, we couldn't have been here. This wouldn't have been us.
Wow.
So it's nice to have a crew of people to share that experience with.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. That's awesome. So I know you're not afraid to speak your mind, which I absolutely love, because I wish I could be more like that, especially on social media and stuff. Do you find, though, that it's a curse or a blessing? Because I would love to be like that.
Ultimately, it's a blessing. I do value kind of community above all. And I really, really appreciate that I'm able to talk to people all day long. My favorite thing to do is to talk to people, which is why I'm a journalist. That's basically what reporting is. And I really love having these online spaces where you can find people who are not only interested in Disney, not only interested in Epcot, not only interested in an attraction, but will be obsessed about a certain detail on a boat ride. Like, those are my people. And so it's really nice to be able to connect with them online. I think in the past year, things have gotten a bit volatile, I'll say, because we are all under a varying degree of duress. Like, the past year has been very, very heavy for everyone. No one has had a great 2020 into 2021. And if you've been up to something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like lately the mood online is a bit tense, but I do feel as though that fog is lifting. And so hopefully things will skew even more positive in the future. But yeah, people, people don't always like what you have to say, and that comes with the territory. And at this point, I'm quite numb to it. But like, I mean, at least when I say things online, it's people usually agreeing that living with the land is great. So my hot takes aren't too terrifying. Though I do like the harmonious barges. I am pro barge, and I'm expecting some pushback for that.
we'll see them on Friday. We head down, and so I'm very interested to see them in person because, as you know, the photos can certainly be taken from specific angles to make it look better, make it look worse. So I'm very interested to see it live and in person and how they look. But that's going to be pretty interesting. Obviously Disneyland is still closed as we approach a year. And of course, Walt Disney World was, closed for several months. And you being in California, it's certainly hard to get out here. One of the things that I think fascinates me the most over the past year is how businesses and people have pivoted and changed, their daily ways to continue on their career and their success. When you report on theme parks and half of them aren't open, the one that is on the other side of the country and it's limited. What have you found yourself doing to pivot and continue, your success as a writer and a journalist during this entire year of COVID and moving forward, of course?
That is the realest question. I ask myself that every couple months, and I just kind of throw up my hands and go, I don't know, man, because somehow time keeps moving forward and stories keep being written and podcasts keep being made. I think that, you're always kind of as good as your last idea. And thankfully, I have not yet run out of ideas during the pandemic. But it is extremely hard because I do not enjoy piggybacking on other people's content. There is obviously part of my job is that because other people report on things very well and you want to boost them and boost their stories, of course. But truly not being able to write about anything myself because I'm not there has been a challenge. It's been really hard, but thankfully there's always something happening. There's just, it hasn't really stopped me from doing my job, which is strange in a way. But thankfully, things just keep happening and then they just pop up. And I don't know. I don't know how I made it through.
Well,
probably a terrible answer.
You've done a wonderful job of it. And, certainly for us, I mean, this isn't our full-time gig by any means, but there certainly was a challenge that we had to face as well is, how do we continue content going? Because, we live 2 hours from Disney World, so our content is very much based on visiting, and reviews and things like that. So we really had to make a decision of, how do we change? How do we come up with, topical things that maybe are a little bit evergreen, even once the parks open back up. So it certainly, hasn't been an easy task for anyone. So it's just wonderful to see someone like yourself continue to thrive, during all of this.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. It has been strange because there's never been a sort of ethical or public health issue with writing about the theme parks. Usually it's just Disney World and then just continue with what you're saying. But now you really have to take into question, am I encouraging people to do something that they otherwise wouldn't? Is writing about this or drawing attention to something happening in Orlando in the parks at either Disney or Universal, is that maybe going to be the tipping point for someone making a decision that they wouldn't have made otherwise? And those kind of mental gymnastics have been really heavy and things I haven't had to think about before. But now I think I just probably will emerge from this approaching the parks with more care, which is always better. And absolutely, more this year than I ever would have before. Everything I do, I have the cast member experience in the back of my mind now. I always did a bit, but now it's so important to me that I consider the employees and their experience with every single thing that happens in the park. So if anything, I will continue to be a loud advocate for them, particularly because so many of them lost their jobs, but so many who are still in the parks are dealing with so much every single day in terms of guest-facing roles. So if anything, I think my reporting will improve from this, but it's just, you just have to think of it in so many more ways than just an item is now for sale. There's the story is so much bigger and national and tied to government and unemployment and who's in office. There's just so much there now.
Well, we absolutely love that. I mean, honestly, it kind of gave me chills because we've been very fortunate to become friends with a lot of cast members in Disney World and, you know, saw what they went through being furloughed and with the park shut down. And we're fortunate that a lot of our friends are back, but we see them and there is a stress certainly that they're going through that I think, you know, most the average park goer doesn't understand. You know, they kind of are just like, hey, they're back at their job. I'm back at my job. It's, you know, this is what we have to do. But they're going through so much. And a lot of those cast members, they may be back at work, but they're feeling such a guilt for all of their friends who aren't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we found that a lot of them, they just feel that they're like, man, I feel I'm great. I'm glad to be back, but I feel guilty that I know 10 really good people who aren't back. So it's wonderful to hear you highlighting, you know, cast members and taking them so into, you know, consideration with everything. I know you're not a fan of the word influencer. Honestly, we aren't either. And we certainly aren't influencers, but there are several people that could call you an influencer based on your following and everything. You have an absolutely incredible Facebook group that is one of the most active and positive that I've seen. We're part of a lot of Disney Facebook groups, as I'm sure you probably, you know, are as well. And they're not all positive. And yours is wonderful. And it truly is that family. And I know yours is the family, as big fans of coffee and all things like that. But it's neat to see a community that's built like that. And in that way, you know, you are certainly an influencer, I think, to many people. And being a journalist, I'm sure that there are, you know, we kind of touched before, there are, I'm sure, criticisms and things that you get based on stories, based on things that you're doing. And maybe this is just more of a personal question, but how do you deal with the criticisms and things or negative reviews that potentially do come along? I know it for us, it's heartbreaking if we get a negative review on iTunes, and sometimes it's easier to focus on that than it is the 10 positive ones that come after. But what is kind of your way of dealing with the criticisms or negativity that ultimately is going to come from the position that you're in?
Oh, that's a good question. So when I went to the opening of Walt Disney World in July, the reopening, I was like, okay, if I am going to travel to this, it's the only time I've been to the park since the pandemic and since the reopening. I decided if I'm going to travel to this, it has to be for a purpose. It has to be to write a news story, to highlight the cast member experience, to dive in for an audience that has no idea how bad the unemployment system is in Florida, how these people who need this money are not getting it, things like that, to highlight every aspect of the experience for the staff, for people returning, etc. And while I was there, I happened to be in a situation where I felt extremely uncomfortable and unsafe with day one crowding. I mean, it's going to happen. It's like the first day when they're working a whole new system. It just so happened that I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. So I shared that, and there was a lot of negativity afterwards and continued forward to the point where I now still in 2021 am occasionally getting negative feedback for when I reported a news story in July, which again, to touch back earlier, I think definitely has to do with me being a woman, but haters will say not, but whatever. So after that, I became just so numb to it that it doesn't really bother me anymore. But I think the most important thing to remind oneself is that for anyone who is in that situation is that one person's negativity should not balance out other people's positivity. And if you have 10 reviews that are saying you're incredible and one person is like, your voice is terrible, just the 10 people are the people who are actually involved with what you're doing, who are actually interested and engaged, and who are part of the community you've built. So I tend to ignore the one and just brush them aside in favor of the 10. Also, usually that type of feedback comes from someone who is not in your community. They're not even paying attention. They just dipped in and dipped out. So they kind of like in the long run, they're going to leave and goodbye. Like, not everyone's going to like you, as hard as that is for me as a Midwesterner to accept, but it is kind of the truth of the matter.
Right.
And in terms of the Facebook group, it has been really, really, really nice. It's really nice. we have almost 6,000 people in there right now, and we tend to, even though not everyone has the same perspective on everything, we tend to unequivocally respect each other, which I think is incredibly important, and respect the cast member experience, things like that. So you won't get posts in our group that, the type of posts that get screenshotted and posted on Twitter, you know what I mean? unnamed Disney Facebook groups. Those type of things just don't really happen in our group because we are very respectful. And I also have a wonderful group of moderators where we definitely spend way too much time approving posts, like have group discussions every day about like, do we think this is okay? What do we think? Like, we feel it out and we are very involved. And I think that hopefully reflects within the group.
Absolutely.
You know, it's been a hard year for everyone. People tend to kind of spout off. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion. But I just keep thinking about the people who are enjoying the work I'm putting forward, and I focus on them. Because otherwise, if you spend all day thinking about the people who don't like it, then you're going to stop serving the ones who do.
Yeah, that's I absolutely love that answer.
Yes,
that's perfect.
That is. What is your absolute favorite experience you've had as a journalist?
Oh my God.
I bet there's many.
I will do two. I will do one work-wise and one that was like actually a good time. Work-wise, I got to attend the opening of Shanghai Disney Resort, which was mind-boggling to me. The invitation went to some UPS near me, and I was like, oh my God, is it really going to be there? Is this real? Like, is the box going to open? Is this going to happen? And I just, the whole way, I was like, there's no way I'm actually going to this. And it was just truly like a once in a lifetime experience to see a brand new resort.
Because
how would I have ever been able to do that ever? Yeah. And so it was really, really cool. Granted, I was reporting for 7 outlets while I was there. So I fully turned in a story when I got back, and one of my editors was like, this is incomprehensible. I was so jet lagged and so like heat exhausted and just so out of it that she was like, these words do not make sense. So it was a lot of work, but it's the type of thing where I'm really glad I had the opportunity to go. I'm glad I was able to write that much and just kind of be a word factory. And it was just, it's so weird to be somewhere like that for the first time, where it's not a new land where you get to experience it. It's an entire park in a different country.
Yeah.
So that was definitely a highlight, but a lot. I don't want to make it sound like it was a joyride. It was exhausting.
Yeah.
But in terms of like fun stuff, as part of a story I was writing, I was able to tour the Cinderella Castle suite. And that was cool because I didn't know what was happening. We just showed up at the park and they were like, come on up. And I'm like, what? Like, don't mess this up. And that was just it being unexpected. And I was there with my mom and I didn't know what was happening. And it was just very overwhelming.
That's amazing. And those are both work things, correct?
Yes. I was reporting I was writing about luxury experiences at Walt Disney World. They had, I think they still have it, this thing called the Crown Collection, which is, they might have just changed the name, but it's all of the extras you can do. Like, you can rent a yacht at the Grand Floridian. You can do these special dining events. They looped club level into that, which we currently don't have. But as part of that, they like gave us a little surprise and toured the castle suite, which wasn't...
That's amazing.
It's not open to guests, so I can't really cover it for a travel publication, but I definitely enjoyed it for myself.
That's amazing.
So cool.
Well, since those were work, what is your favorite been... experience as a guest?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I don't want to be a total cheeseball and be like, the friends I've made along the way.
Hey,
but
that counts.
Yes.
It has been nice. Like, sometimes a lot of us will just end up gathering. Because, you know, when something opens, like, everyone comes out.
Yep.
If it's like everyone's at the park, like locals are there, people fly in for it. And so it's nice to, you know, at the end of the day, we'll all go get a drink and we'll all hang out. And it's like, I didn't know any of these people a few years ago. And now I talk to them constantly. Like, these are my people. These are my friends. These are my coworkers. I love them. And so that's been really, really nice. But in terms of being a guest, I don't know. I can't pinpoint one experience because they've all been great. Is that that's great. Is that humiliating?
No. That's fantastic.
Not at all. I think that can sometimes be one of the hardest questions because I think, too, you know, certainly as a guest, you experience it in so many different ways. You know, there can be your first time you went. There can be the time you just went last. There can be, you know, events, whether you were there with friends or family, your parents, our kids, whatever. So I totally get that. Going back, and this might be a little bit of a long-winded question, so I'll try and keep it short, but kind of in a sense of, you know, what is it really like having the job that you have? Because, you know, I can say again, it's just podcasters who currently kind of do this as a hobby, but something that we do hope to grow. We're in the parks about every 3 weeks. You know, we try and experience new restaurants every time. We try and experience new things every time. And from an outsider looking in, it's very easy for people just to look and go, well, that must be nice, you know. For you, that must be nice that you get to see Galaxy's Edge before anyone. That must be nice to tour Avengers Campus before anyone. And I think from a lot of times the outside, they don't realize how much work you actually put in. And yes, it's really nice, I'm sure, to see Avengers Campus and Galaxy's Edge before they open to the public. But what is it truly like having the job that you have, and how do you find that work balance along with life and enjoying it kind of on a spectator guest side simultaneously, if that makes sense?
Yes. I'm actually writing down notes because there's so many things I want to say.
Awesome.
So to go back to your question, which I'm now realizing I didn't answer fully about being called an influencer, things like that. Mm-hmm. So I very much view social media as new avenues to tell stories. My job is to get information out correctly, factually, quickly, and to tell stories. And by posting the same information I would in a story, in a TikTok, on Twitter, in Instagram, like in packaging it in different ways, is just getting the info to the audience as quickly as possible. But the lens through which that is done on something like Instagram appears as though I am an influencer. Mm-hmm. And so it has been challenging simply because a lot of times it feels like I take a shot at my own credibility by posting a photo of me smiling in front of a castle to tell you actual news, even though that is the best way to get that message across to that audience. If I were to post something more sterile and not just me existing, you know, the algorithm prefers faces, which is dark, but that's a different subject. But if I didn't present it as that, then the information wouldn't travel as far. And ultimately, my job is to make sure people get the info, the updates, the breaking news as easily as possible. And that's not like swiping up is kind of a pain in the butt. Like, people want to see it when they're in their feeds. And so that's why a lot of times my content, for lack of a better term, is framed as an influencer. Now, the flip side of that, to go back to what you just said, is that it almost makes my job look easy. Again, I'm doing a terrible disservice to myself. But when you're smiling and you're like, we're in Galaxy's Edge, like, here's the things you need to know, it makes everything feel lighter and not as labor intensive as mm-hmm. it actually is. Because when we do these events, like, say, Galaxy's Edge is open, like, come in, take photos, write about it, do all that, you typically have so much stuff you have to do in such a tight amount of time. Sometimes there's an embargo, which means that you can't post anything until 12 p.m., let's say, and you're in there at 10:30. So you have to report everything, answer every question that you can't get answered, because usually operational questions can't get answered beforehand. You have to wait until you are in the land. So you come in with like 25 questions that you've needed to get answered for months. You have DMs of people being like, is this accessible? Like, is there a single rider? Is there this or that? Like, all these specific questions you want to get answered for them and for a better user experience when people show up, sometimes later that day or the next day. And you're trying to answer all of those while also reporting a story, while also experiencing everything for the first time, while also capturing photo, video, notes, audio, because reporters have to be on every platform at this point. So granted, it is a blessing to be in that position, to be able to do that. And I know and recognize that wholeheartedly, but there is a lot of pure adrenaline scrambling that happens that often isn't recorded because it's not a good look. Wow. So there's a lot that goes into that. And then also on top of that, I think what people don't always recognize is that if you're a reporter who has a relationship with the company, if you're a reporter, everything has to be factual. That's the job. But if anything is even debatable, you're going to hear about it. So if something is, if you're inferring something that isn't true, if you're saying like, oh, this is just an example, but like, oh, like this space could be for further expansion. You can't say things like that because that's one, like, you don't know that. You may have heard it from a bunch of people, but like the sourcing on it isn't completely correct. You can't go forward with it. And so a lot of times you have to make sure that you are only giving the information that is absolutely accurate. And if not, it's gonna come back for you because people rely on that truth. So I think people don't realize how much work it is behind the scenes, especially the time crunch, but it's fun. Like the reason people like me report on this stuff is because of that kind of frenetic energy of trying to get all of this information out. Like that's what we live for. So we signed up for it and we kind of love it. It's just, you know, you just don't sleep for a few days and that's the road.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I can say one of the things, and you can tell you have such a passion, obviously, for Disney, for theme parks. And certainly that's why you're so good at what you do. One of the things my brother always states is, you know, you should find what you have a passion for and find what you're good at. And wherever those two things intersect, that's what you should do. And you've obviously found that, which I think is incredible. And you've put in the work, you know, it's not like you just said, hey, I'm going to be a theme park journalist. And then the next day Disney called and was like, hey, come on out. Let's, you know, we have a relationship now. You've put in all of that work. One thing that fascinates me very much is breaking news. I'm trying to think of how to frame the question. How do you deal with breaking news amongst other media outlets, or do you just focus simply on you're breaking that news for your following? You're not worried about anybody else that's breaking it, because as I follow along on Twitter and stuff, I mean, there's such a, I think this breaking news, you know, where everybody wants to be first, often to a point that they don't break accurate news, you know, and then they have to go back and it's like, they'd rather break the news and then correct it later then break it and have it be factual. How do you deal with breaking news?
So I think the difference there is that I'm benefited by the fact that I don't run my own media platform. So if I were someone who was hustling and doing the grind and had my own website, which I respect everyone, you included, who has their own thing that they work on, because it's so hard. It's so hard. I don't think people understand how hard it is. I would not have the energy to update my own website more than once a day. Not a chance. I don't have it. Like it's so much work and I don't think people realize it a lot. But in terms of, you know, if I ran my own news website, you're kind of traffic in clicks. And so even if the blog post is just like a fifth gate is opening, even if there's no information, like you need that click. That's, you know, that's your income. So it makes sense why certain people would break stories that way. For me, I'm usually reporting on stuff after the fact. So the only reason that I have kind of gotten into the breaking news game is because I now have people who are interested in this on my social media accounts, which wasn't the case a couple years ago. So I used to just like know the news and just like sit on it until my story was due. But now it's kind of like, why would I, if this is happening, I'll blast it out so that all the fans know firsthand and we can just get it out there. Cause it's always about like information first, things that are correct, et cetera. So I have done it at like accidentally just because I've happened to be early on things, but it is a level of stress that just doesn't go away because you live in fear of missing something. And granted, my job wouldn't actually change that much if I just turned off Twitter alerts during the day. But it's important to me, I guess, from a holistic sense, that people know they can come to me for accurate information. And part of that is the rush of like news is happening right now, especially because as fans, the community values that very highly. Like you want to be... If I always joke about how like 2 hours later, things are just old news. Like I literally woke up this morning and was like, oh, I missed the email that Epic Universe has resumed construction. I didn't even post anything because I was like, well, everyone already knows, even though it's like just this bubble knows, not the whole world. The whole world doesn't know what Epic Universe is.
Right.
So it's a balance.
Right.
But I enjoy being able to provide a service to fans, even if it makes me shaky all day.
That might be all the coffee too, though. It's hard.
Yeah, it might be the me like looking at my first coffee, being like, "Why is it empty?" It's kind of like the fun of it. Again, to go back to what I said before, like that adrenaline rush is part of being this type of reporter. And so, as much as I say I hate it, I love it.
Yeah, of course.
That's awesome. Well, so with COVID, what have you missed most about the parks?
Oh my God, the ease of all of it. I didn't realize how easy it used to be. Like, I know that in a year or two, I'm going to look back and be like, I had an annual pass that let me go to Disneyland every day. Yeah. I didn't need to tell anyone. I could just get a text from a friend who's like, come to dinner. And I'd be like, see ya in an hour. That blows my mind even at this point. And so I really, really miss just how casual it used to be. You could just show up. It was no big deal. You didn't have to, like, at Disney World, you know, you had to book everything so far in advance, and that has flipped a bit. But even now, like, I just booked a hotel. I just changed my hotel for the 50th in October, and my reservation won't link to my profile because it's a whole mess. And so they're looking into it, but that also means that I can't book the same amount of park passes. So I can't even like reserve my day in a park because of a technical glitch. And before, I didn't have to tell anyone where I was going. Yeah. Like if I didn't want to book a fast pass, I was a ghost. And now it's like the planning has moved closer to the gate, I would say. It's not everything inside. It's like, if you're showing up, you have to have a reservation. And so it just has made it a little more burdensome in the fact that you can't treat the parks as casually as you used to. And granted, I am saying that with like a 180-day dining booking window. But, if for someone like me who would like decide sometimes that they were doing day of because I was there enough where I didn't have to hit a certain amount of things, it's a little sad that that's gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, with that being said, and, you know, knowing, I mean, you know, I still think 2021 isn't going to look probably too much different. Hopefully we're getting, you know, Disneyland reopening, obviously, much sooner than later at this point. But with some of the restrictions and all that are in place in Walt Disney World, and we know those are going to continue into 2022. But, you know, once we do look at having hopefully a majority of people vaccinated, once numbers are down, once things are able to increase slightly in capacity, are there certain restrictions or things, you know, that just say Walt Disney World or Universal's doing currently that you kind of hope continue, you know, post COVID, like certain things as, you know, park reservations or,
that's,
you know,
such a good question. That is such a good question. Oh my God. So, you know, I'm just going to say it. I like FastPass. I know not everyone agrees with me, but I really, really like knowing that I am going on Space Mountain while I'm sitting at home in Los Angeles. Like, I like planning ahead and being like, I know what I'm going to do. And I like having that in the books instead of just waiting. I know it's like a mental thing, but for some reason, I would rather like shoot myself in the foot to go on one ride guaranteed than to have like a medium wait on multiple rides. It's
agreed.
Just how my brain works. And I love it. But besides that, I'm trying to think of like pie in the sky things. I mean, like, ideally, I would love a scenario where you are not sweating from your proximity to other people while watching nighttime entertainment. I mean, that would be a dream.
Yes.
But yes. I don't anticipate just that will ever happen. Like, I know when they reopened Shanghai, everyone had their little box. And I've been like dreaming of that. I've been like, give me my little box to watch fireworks. Let me sit in my like, that would be ideal. And I know it's not going to happen just because of the way our park is shaped compared to theirs, et cetera.
Yeah.
But that would be a gift. I really, really like what they've done with characters at Epcot. I think that kind of like, I don't even know how you would describe that, corralling them in the grass, I guess. I don't know if there's a better way to say that, but I think that's been adorable, and it really it's like the juice is worth the squeeze in the sense that you have characters interacting with a lot of people at once as opposed to one-on-one greetings, which I don't like for every character. But for some of them, I think that's really, really nice so that if you don't want to wait in line to, say, meet a princess, you still kind of get that moment of interaction from afar. I think that would be really cool to keep around. Yeah. And then otherwise... I was going to make a joke about things that are closed that I want to stay closed, but I really want Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor to reopen, so I'm not even going to touch that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I can say we've got 10 and 13-year-old daughters who don't care about characters anymore. You know, it's not their thing. But my wife, you know, Rhonda and I, who are still kids at heart, we still love to see them. But yeah, I don't want to stand in a line all the time for them. I like being able to wave at Mickey and Minnie from afar as they go mm-hmm. through a cavalcade or whatever they call it at Epcot. I feel like it's a different word for each park. Or all of a sudden Winnie the Pooh is just, you know, gallivanting through the UK or something like that, I think is really cool. I know for us, park reservations is kind of a love-hate. We stay on property every month, so we're usually covered with, you know, park reservations, and we're usually booked out a few months. But with the 3 days, you know, rolling for APs, it's sometimes hard to get some of those reservations, but we're also the type that when there's an announcement, we're there day one. You know, we were there at 3 a.m. for the opening of Galaxy's Edge, and we were there at 4 a.m. for Rise of the Resistance. We were there at 5 a.m. for Mickey and Minnie's. All not 100% sure if we were getting in. And so, like, right now, we know that we're attending Magic Kingdom on October 1st for the 50th because we have a park reservation. And we don't technically need to show up at 2 a.m. and, you know, wait in a parking lot or something.
So,
I mean, and from a statistical standpoint, it does everything Disney needs, because Disney can truly monitor and say, this is how many people we're expecting in this park on this day. So the amount of food that we need to order, the amount of people we need to staff, you know, I think that it gives them a lot of data that they may want using forward. So I'll be interested to see, you know, if park reservations are almost here to stay.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on every single point you've made. Selfishly, I don't love them for me, but it does make a ton of sense, especially when you consider that, like, they can forcibly move you to another park. Like, if everyone wants to go to Magic Kingdom, you just can't in the morning, at least, before you can hop. So I think for their sake, it's better for them if we have to make a reservation, but I also don't like being shut out.
I know that's I think the hardest one is, you know, and we've been lucky. I don't know that we've not been able to get one when we wanted, but we know several people that have, you know, that they were going through their plans and next thing they knew they couldn't go to, you know, Hollywood Studios or whatever they wanted on that day. So
I mean, I personally don't have one for October 1st because I had a pass that was discontinued. I had the premier pass. So it was Disneyland, Disney World.
Yeah.
I couldn't renew it early. Oh, they discontinued it. I took about 6 to 7 weeks to get a new pass. So I couldn't even book it. I didn't think it would take that long, so I didn't buy a hard ticket. So like, I didn't even get a pass to be able to book until a couple weeks ago. And so I'm kind of in this weird abyss where, like, I mean, I'm online enough where I'm going to figure it out. Like, I'm the second things open, I'm going to get in there. But it's still weird for, I assume you also have an annual pass.
Yes.
It's weird for people who are that committed to going to the parks that you have to do a bit of math to be like, okay, if I do this, if I don't have a hotel reservation, you have to move things around. And I think that's not a great user experience. But in the long term, for capacity, I welcome it because anything to keep the parks safer is important to me.
Yeah.
But selfishly,
yeah.
It's tough. So we had to, our passes, we just renewed in February, but we were booking for the 50th back in, I don't know, September, October, whatever it was that it opened. And so we had to book a package with tickets. And, you know, we're lucky because all we had to do was that $200, the one night room, I think it is, deposit technically. And we're going to be able to go back and remove the package and apply our APs, but that's what we had to do to get a park reservation. So you're right. Math is not my strong suit. And there I am, like, you know, with like a whiteboard almost, like, all right, if we do this and this, and then we stay here.
Oh my God.
And we,
me trying to figure out the annual pass refund amounts to explain them to people. Oh, I was like, I am in the word business. I did not do very well in math in high school. I had to go in for tutoring every day. And yet here I am, like, truly, like all those gifts of like Charlie with the board, just me trying to be like this over this times this minus this, trying to get like facts across correctly to people and being like, maybe this works. I have no idea.
Oh yeah. Well, and then our 10 and 13 year olds got checks cut to them for their refunds.
Yeah.
And so then we had to go through a whole thing of, all right, well, what's the, because we're like, that's our money. Like, we're not putting, we're not giving that to you. So we're like, all right, how do we catch their check and get their money for us so that, you know, we can just go back.
Oh my God. You must have felt like such a Hollywood parent, like taking advantage of their kids' money.
I know. Yeah. We're like, hey, we paid for these passes because we had the, you know, we had the Platinum Plus, and we did not, for an entire year of that Platinum Plus, we did not get to step foot in a water park. And now, you know,
but not for nothing. We're in Florida and I'm not going in February.
Right, right.
True.
To a water park.
Yeah, the good months, they're shut down. So, and with, you know, one reopening here Sunday, there's been no talk of, hey, can we upgrade back to a Platinum Plus? We'd like to include them. And, you know, we're certainly not paying $70 a person to go check it out for a day. So hopefully something comes back. Well, one thing we like to do with our guests to kind of end off is sort of a little rapid fire of some of your favorites. And we can kind of focus on Walt Disney World since that's predominantly kind of, you know, what our show is about. But we're just going to go down. Rhonda and I will kind of lob back and forth a couple, you know, quick rapid fire questions. And you let us know what's your favorite.
Okay, yes. I'm ready.
What is your favorite ride or attraction?
Space Mountain at Disney World, which is better than Disneyland. People hate that opinion, and I don't care. I stand behind it, but it is tied with Expedition Everest.
Ooh, okay.
Nice.
All right.
And your favorite resort?
Ooh, I hate that every time. I just love Grand Floridian. I love it, and like the rooms are not what I want them to be. I think the rooms could be much, much nicer for the price point. But I just, like I said, I just have that like childhood love.
That's
for
awesome.
It. That's but if I could stay anywhere, my favorite hotel to stay in, you know, nostalgia aside, I think the Four Seasons Resort Orlando at Walt Disney World Resort, which is sometimes cheaper than the Grand Floridian, offers so much for the price.
Wow. We have, I'll add that to our list.
Yeah.
We've not done Grand Flow, Riviera, or Beach are the only three Disney properties we've not stayed at. And we're hoping to knock one of those at least off our list this year. But I'll have to add Four Seasons to that list as well. So I've heard other wonderful things about it.
Yeah. It's a very bougie thing to be like, well, the Four Seasons is grand, but I've compared the prices on multiple occasions. And usually the Grand Floridian is the same price, if not more expensive.
And the Four Seasons is the one that's right there near Golden Oak and the campground, correct?
Yeah, you drive through, essentially you drive through Golden Oak to get to it. I mean, if you're with like a huge family or a bunch of kids and you want to be right at the Magic Kingdom, then it's not the best resort for you.
Right.
But if you, like me, bounce around and go to Universal on your trip and go to all the parks and go to Disney Springs and just go around and around, the proximity of being by Magic Kingdom isn't as beneficial to someone like me. So staying at somewhere like the Four Seasons, where the amenities are much higher than those at a Disney resort, as someone who has been rained out at the Grand Floridian and just there's like no, you know, a fancy hotel has umbrellas, you know what I mean? And there's just no umbrellas for you to use there. So for stuff like that, I think for the right kind of stay, if you're going to be spending that price point anyway, it's worth looking into.
Wow. Nice. Okay. We will check that out for sure. What is your favorite quick service restaurant?
Oh my gosh. I love a protein during the day. So I really like Satuli Canteen. Yeah. What else? I haven't been to the parks in so long. I'm coming back at some point soon, but I usually eat there. If not, where do I eat? My brain has rewired itself where it's just like, I eat popcorn every day because when I go back, I'm not sitting down for a meal. I'm just going to be snacking to the high heavens. But nice. The quick service in Mexico, I believe, is La Hacienda de San... No? Okay, my brain still works. My horrifyingly embarrassing hack is that I will go there and get two sides of beans sometimes. Like if it's a busy work day and I'm just running around the park, I don't like to rest. I don't like to have a meal. I'm just shoving food in my face. So if I go there, I can eat $4 worth of beans.
Hey, Keep in mind, that's a great hack.
If you thought I was fancy a minute ago when I was repping the Four Seasons, like get ready for $4 beans because it's $2 a cup. You get two cups of them. It's a protein-rich meal. You can run for like a good 8 hours on those. Nice. It's just balance. And so I embarrassingly really, really like doing that when I don't have time to eat a full meal.
Well, but you're covering all bases. You know, you're covering for the family that is budget conscious, and then you're covering for the ones that want to hit up Grand Flow. So you got all the bases covered. Anybody
hey,
listening?
Hey, family, get your kids a cup of beans and call it a day.
Yes, yes.
No, Disney dining plan? Here's some beans.
That's like your make your own Disney dining plan. And then if you pack them up, you get them to go, you take them back and eat them at the Grand Flow, then you're really getting the best of both worlds. So yes. I could see that. So how about your favorite table or signature service restaurant?
Ooh, okay. So I love Wine Bar George so much. So much. And I know that's at Springs, but I basically at this point, there's very few things on my list of because I was going to the parks every 4 to 6 weeks and I live across the country.
Wow.
So it was a must. Like if I was in the Orlando area, I had to go to Wine Bar George, period. So that's kind of a must for me on a trip, but I do love so much, and it's not open yet, which is such a bummer, but I went to Takumite one time, and it was transcendent experience. I went with a group of friends. We had the best dinner, like unlike anything I've ever had in the parks before. I used to hype Tiffin's a lot. This completely demolished Tiffin's for me. Like,
really?
This was the new gold standard, and it's not yet open again, but when it is worth splurging on. Again, I like to balance between like small spend, big spend, but that was one of the best theme park meals I've ever had. But in terms of regular trips, if I'm at Magic Kingdom, I will only eat at Skipper Canteen, really.
Yes.
Like, if I'm going anywhere, I'm going to Skipper Canteen. And if I'm not going there, I'm probably not eating a meal.
We were just watching actually the YouTube video that you did with Skipper Canteen because it's one of our favorites. And I was just, Ron and I looked at each other and we're like, oh, we gotta go back there. Like, it's so underrated. And I feel like people are still turned off by what it originally kind of was in that original menu. In the descriptions, I think people just weren't adventurous enough, especially at Magic Kingdom. You know, it seemed like something like that maybe should have belonged at, you know, Animal Kingdom or Epcot. But it is one of our favorite places. We'll be on Magic Kingdom on Saturday, and we're already like, we may have to pop in for a drink and some appetizers at least.
Yeah, it's so good. And also, just to mention, so in terms of discussing things where like this, the optics of what I do can look super chill. When I did that video at Skipper Canteen, so first of all, I did a video series for Eater, and the amount of prep work I won't even go into. But we did about four of those in one day. Half the crew puked because they went from not eating to just eating leftovers. So it was like you worked for like 6 hours, you didn't eat a thing, you didn't have water, and then it was like, eat all the leftovers, move on to the next thing. I didn't puke because, you know, I know how to eat.
Wow.
I come from Illinois, from Chicago. We eat a lot and I rep it. But in terms of that video, you know, I'm on camera describing food, which is not, I write about food, but I don't really describe it in real time. So it was a little out of my comfort zone, you know, enhanced by the fact that I had a wall of people staring at me. So like that's the type of thing you don't see is that I'm on camera eating, which as a woman, yikes, because you know that YouTube comment section is not going to be kind to you. And you're describing what you're doing. Like you have to have expertise in theme park and food, but you also have multiple PR people staring at you, people from the kitchen, people in like the restaurant who work there, your team, like everyone is staring at you eating it. So it's like, that's a really good example of the things people don't see is like someone in the wings waiting to be like, actually, can you not say that? While you're just trying to eat a bite of food.
Yeah, wow. Well, that actually leads me to a question that I guess hopefully you can answer. If you were to bite into something like that and you were just like, this is disgusting, do you just scrap it or do you have to act like you like it?
So I would probably, I wasn't part of the editing process. I would assume that my reaction would have been something that would have shown that, but right. I hand selected the places we went to. Gotcha. So I was kind of insulated by that because I put forward the places that I thought would be the best fit for the audience and places that I personally loved.
Perfect.
But they did. So we sent like a recommended list of dishes we wanted to do on camera that I've had before that I stand behind. They threw in a few other things. I think those really didn't make it in, but if something's not good, I'm going to be kind about it because the people making it are right there. But I'm not going to tell you to spend your money on it.
Yes. Yes. No, that's completely fair.
Yeah.
Well, what's your favorite bar or lounge?
Outside a wine bar, George.
Yeah.
I love the bar in the Boardwalk Hotel. I believe it's Bellevue Lounge.
Yes.
Yes.
I haven't said these words out loud in so many months. I love hanging out there because it's never too packed. It's very chill. It's like a great place to decompress from a busy parks day. I kind of have been leaning more towards those areas now that I go to the park so frequently. Before I'd be like, oh, I need to be at like an event bar. You know what I mean? I need to be somewhere that feels special. And lately, I'm just looking for a quiet place at the end of the day to hang out with friends at. So somewhere like that, you know, a nondescript hotel bar, not somewhere that's popular or a scene. I've had some good nights at Enchanted Rose, but I would probably more opt to something like a little less new, a little less flashy.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's your favorite place for coffee? Because I know you love coffee.
Oh my God. Okay, so the last move I pulled, the last time I was in the parks pre-pandemic, which was exactly 1 year ago today in March, I was with my family and we had a car. So this is so pre-pandemic, it's ridiculous. I made us drive to Disney Springs so that I could mobile order Starbucks and then go to Magic Kingdom because it was faster.
Yeah.
Wow, so as someone who like, neat. The way that I work is that like once I'm in the parks, I'm go, 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 go. As evidenced by being a bean eating lady when I could have anything in the World Showcase. I don't like to waste time. So I can't wait in that line. I will do it sometimes if it's like a casual day and I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to stand here for half an hour to try to get a coffee. But I just feels better to stop off at Disney Springs, grab a coffee and leave. Time wise, probably not. Probably takes more time, but it feels better. And that's important to me. Yeah. So I ideally will get coffee there. Otherwise, I will mess with Joffrey's later in the day if I need a secondary coffee because this is so boring to everyone. I prefer a latte to coffee and their lattes aren't exactly what I'm looking for. But in terms of iced coffee, I will do that later in the day. And then otherwise, I will sometimes bring powdered coffee with me. My friend runs this company, Joe. It's based out of New York. He's a huge Disney fan. And Jonathan's powdered coffee is really, really good. So I'll bring that with me if I have no time. I'll just get a cup of hot water before a work event at like 7 a.m, dump it in and chug it.
That's another great hack. Coffee and beans. So far we've learned are two wonderful Carly hacks.
Yeah,
I think everybody will do in going forward.
Third Carly hack, do not use the coffee maker in your room. Do not. Was told that unsavory things happen in there and you don't want to be going near it.
Yeah. We tend to, we tend to go down to the food court or, most recently, Barcelona Lounge. Cause we tend to stay at Coronado Springs, which is our favorite place. So we'll head down there and get our morning cup.
Oh, I love staying in that tower. It's perfect.
Gorgeous. Yeah. We have just absolutely, we were in love with Coronado Springs, prior to the tower being built. And with that addition, I mean, it just took it to a whole new level. So we absolutely love staying there.
How do you feel about the elevators?
We've stayed there probably a dozen times since the tower opened, and every time I walk in the elevator, I look to press the button that I've already pressed outside. It's still I can't get used to it. I like it in theory. It's been weird with COVID because, you know, they're saying, well, one party or X number of people per elevator. So often there is some confusion. And before, we would never wait for an elevator. There is a little bit more of a wait now as parties are having to split up. But the system hasn't been updated from what I can tell to maybe say, we're only going to go to one floor, assuming that you have one family or one party. So if you have two people, two groups showing up and they both press, it might send both of you to elevator A at two different floors.
Interesting.
And then you're like, well, wait a second. We're not supposed to be together. And then there's always that awkward thing where if you're the second family, you just stand there and wait for the door to close. And then you like count down from five. And then you're like, all right, let me press a button again. And every once in a while you press it too soon and that same door
opens.
Yes,
and then it's like, get in the elevator. Yep. Yeah.
And at that point, and that's how we've been. It's been interesting. We've been back to Universal and Disney, and there are the times where it might just be Rhonda and I, and there's one other person in the elevator, and there's just this awkwardness of, look, you're standing in a corner. Is it cool if we join you? We'll stand in this corner. And, we all got our masks on, but let's just, let's try and save some time. So it's an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm. This is the stuff I live for that I'm missing out on.
You can feel free to hit us up anytime. We've been back, so many times and are trying to experience it all. And of course, do it in the safest possible manner as well. I mean, honestly, we really have only been out to eat near our home three times maybe in the past year. But we've been out to eat at Disney and Universal dozens and dozens of times because, the safety and guidelines and restrictions are being put into place so well. So, we hadn't been to our favorite place, which is like a mile away, in a year. And we went for lunch last Friday and we're like, look, it's lunch. It's noon. Nobody's in there. Let's go ahead and go and have a lunch and, kind of be back. But other than that, we've certainly followed as much as we can and been safe. So, if you need any insight, we probably have it from the parks. So,
I will definitely let you know.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you think is the most overrated thing at Walt Disney World?
Oh God. We have like another 6 hours, right? oh goodness. Okay. I'll just, dining at Hollywood Studios.
Okay.
Mostly not for me.
Yeah.
Probably Hollywood Studios in general. Mostly not for me. okay. I'm trying to go through everything. Sorry, I'm just gonna keep thinking.
That's a tough one.
Oh, I mean, I do not like the ride Dinosaur. That's well evidenced because I'm terrified of it. I think I have some real problems with Frozen Ever After, which
really?
I have. I did a whole episode with Podcast The Ride about it, and it got heated because I do not love. I think living with the land is underrated, but that's typically it. Yeah.
That was my next question. Yeah. That was my next question. It's the most
underrated.
A lot of
people love living with the land.
We do.
Yeah.
We love it.
I do not. I think people love corn dog nuggets and shouldn't. They are not good.
Yep. Yep.
I would rather hold out for a really nice quality corn dog. I don't need the teeny tiny ones. They're not for me.
Yeah.
I think that it's the cheese dip, the sealed cheese dip is a non-starter.
Oh, no.
I debate with my friend Brooke McDonald about this constantly, but the sealed cheese is a subpar food product. The nacho cheese is what I'm looking for, to the point where I will not really eat pretzels because I'm like, I can't mess with this cheese. And then they wrapped it in with the price a few years ago. So you're like, I paid for this dumb cheese that I don't even want. That's not good. That I can't get into. Yeah, not good.
I love that.
What else? No, I don't want to rag on that. That's fine.
Well, you can send the cheese to me. I actually have an unopened cheese in our cupboard right now because I'm pretty sure it lasts for ever. Because who knows what it's made of. And I agree with you completely. Like, I think if I eat it here at home, I'm going to realize what garbage it is. But there's something for me about being in the park. And I always get a Mickey pretzel with the plastic cheese and I get a popcorn. And when I'm done with my pretzel, I actually will dip the popcorn into the leftover cheese.
Yes.
And that is one of my favorite things. But it is the sealed cheese that I'm doing that with. So
The first half, I'm right there with you, lockstep. Then when you're dunking it in the hard plastic cheese, no.
Yeah.
Need the liquid gold. Need the real stuff.
Yeah.
Yes,
well,
I agree.
Yeah, if we ever run into you there, then...
See, she knows what's up.
Give me the cheese. Yep. Yeah, Rhonda's been advocating against the sealed cheese for years. So she's on your side there.
Thank you. I'm glad to have joined forces with you over this.
Well, before we let you go, please let everyone know where they can find you, where they can find your work, where they can find your very amusing podcast. Anything you want to do. This is self-promotion time. So have at it.
Cool. You can find me everywhere online at Carly Wiesel, CarlyWiesel. I'm usually on Twitter all day, and you can join my Facebook group, which is called The Fomaly. It's facebook.com/groups/CarlyWiesel, I think. I should know that by heart. Otherwise, season two of my podcast, Very Amusing, will be coming likely later this March. It's essentially just a deep dive into the reported stories on things that Disney fans and Universal fans, theme park fans, are interested in. So we have some cool stuff lined up for the season, and I think you will enjoy it.
Well, Carly, thank you so much for joining us. We truly appreciate your time.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun. I what a wonderful conversation. You both are fantastic. I'm so glad I could do this and hear about the elevator drama. I'm just over the moon.
Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us today. We hope that you loved this episode as much as we did. And if you have not already subscribed to Main Street Magic, would you please do so right now? And as long as you're out there, you might as well leave us a rating and review.
Because it helps our show grow.
That's all we've got. We'll see you real soon.
Most everyone's mad here.